You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm Chad Dotson, RedLegNation.com. Joining me today, as he often does, also from RedLegNation.com, Bill Lack. How are you today, Bill?
I'm almost delirious.
Almost delirious.
Almost delirious with excitement of the idea of a new culture in the Reds clubhouse.
Well, I had an idea you would be. We haven't really talked much about the Reds changes in the dugout, I guess. And I had an idea you'd be excited, but delirious, really?
Well, the only thing that's keeping I'm inches short of delirious, and I'll be delirious if they hire the right guy. And I don't know who the right guy is.
I don't know who the right guy is, and we can talk about the guys they're thinking about. But obviously in our last podcast, Joel Luckup and I discussed some of what was going on in the wake of the Dusty Baker firing last week and some of the possibilities that had been coming out at the time. That was just a day or two after it had happened. Actually, I think it was the day after it happened. Now we're over a week later, and not a whole lot else in terms of there's a little bit of there's been a little bit of talk publicly about what's going on, but not a whole lot, has there?
No, there really hasn't. But there have been some interesting speculations, you know. And C. Trent put an interesting article together in the Enquirer with some names that are kind of ones that aren't getting bandied about, you know, regularly. And John Arardi put forth, I thought, a very interesting name. Let me ask you, what do you think of the Larkin and O'Neill names kind of floating to the around in the soup?
Well, I can't think of a single reason why anyone would think that Paul O'Neill would be a good manager for this team.
I can't. Nostalgia.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, that's the only reason to really think. That's why people would want him. And he was a fiery player. Everyone knows that. And so I guess there's some assumption that he's going to get in the dugout and kick butts. And listen, Paul O'Neill may be a great manager. I don't know. But there's no evidence whatsoever as to that would give me reason to believe that he would be the perfect fit for the Reds, as I've seen being thrown around.
Yeah, but can't you say the same thing about Barry Larkin?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, actually, you know, I was you could probably go back in the archives at Red Leg Nation, and there are a few places where I said, "Boy, I wish they'd bring Barry Larkin back as manager someday." Because you know he was, he's my favorite player ever, and I thought, you know, this guy, he's a smart player. I thought he might be a good fit. Then I got to listen to him doing a little bit of baseball analysis on television, and you know, he's sort of Dusty Baker light is what I would be afraid of. In terms of old school managerial thinking, and I really don't want to see that out of the next manager.
Well, the other thing
go
ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
The other thing to me is this team is built to win right now, and there is no way in the world, in my opinion, they're going to hire somebody with no managerial or no coaching experience that's going to have to learn on the job. They're going to hire a guy that's got some street cred. You know, now it may not be managing in the big leagues and you know, because can we agree that Brian Price is the heavy favorite?
Oh, I think so, and everything that I've seen and read about him makes me comfortable with him as the top choice.
Yeah. Did you see the name that John Arardi floated?
What was it?
Wally Backman.
Well, that's an interesting choice, of course. Wally Backman, a fiery player during his days with the Mets as a second baseman,
and been a very, very successful minor league manager.
Extremely successful, of course. You know, he at one time got the Arizona Diamondbacks job in the major leagues and held it for what, a week or something?
I think it was 3 days.
3 days, yeah.
Before some things came to light that you know. I just thought, well, I think almost anything John Arardi writes is interesting, but I thought it was an interesting off-the-wall kind of choice. I mean, there's no way the Reds are going to hire Wally Backman, but I just thought it was an interesting. Let me run some of these names. I don't know if you saw this article from C. Trent. He had some interesting names. And the first one was Brad Ausmus, who's a special assistant to the GM in San Diego. He's a Dartmouth grad. He's known one of the smartest guys in baseball, and he interviewed with the Red Sox last year for a managerial job. I think he's an interesting choice, or an interesting idea. DeLino DeShields, the Reds aren't going to take the guy from the AA and put him on the big league squad, even though I think DeLino DeShields, after watching him manage in Dayton myself, I think he's a future big league manager. I don't know if it's here.
Interesting, really. You're that impressed with
him? Yeah, I was very impressed with him. He manages an aggressive style of baseball. It's hard to judge sabermetrics and managing style in the minor leagues because, you know, they have to do things a little differently. Next name on C-Trans list was Billy Hatcher. No way. I mean, for one thing,
I don't see that.
Let me ask you this question. If we stay in-house and make Brian Price the manager, do you keep anybody else on that staff?
Well, that's largely going to be Brian Price's decision because he's seen these guys work up close, and I hope that it's not going to be a matter of friendship or something like that.
Well, I don't think it is necessarily his decision. I think it's his and Walt Jocketty's decision, and probably Bob Castellini's.
Yeah, but they're going to let Price pick some of his own coaches at least.
Some, yes, I agree.
But I would not be averse to cleaning the house entirely as just a public statement, if nothing else.
Well, you got to change if they feel like they need to change the culture or the
exactly that
which is the only thing you can really get out of the Dusty Baker firing is the front office, the ownership decided that there was a problem, you know, with the culture of the team and the way the team was playing. Then to me, I mean, you keep Price because you can't. There's no way you can argue against the job he's done with the pitching staff and maybe even the bullpen coach, whose name I can never remember. But the rest of them, they're gone. Everybody'd be gone.
Yeah. And I would not actually be surprised to see them do that, with the exception possibly of Billy Hatcher, frankly, because he's a former Red and he was on the 90 team, and there's a lot of nostalgia. That's one thing that concerns me a little bit about this managerial search and the fact that Larkin and O'Neill's names have popped up, and is that Bob Castellini has done in my opinion, amazing job in terms of sort of focusing on the history of the Reds and raising awareness of the history of this great franchise. Now, I say that I'm scared about that, but I don't think he's going to let that color the way they go about this managerial search. If you saw the look on his face after the Reds lost that one-game playoff, this is a guy that does not like losing, and they're ready to win now.
That eliminates two of these names on this list because the other name on this list was Chris Spire, and I don't see any way. I mean, of Dusty Baker Light.
No chance.
Ken Griffey Sr. is also on this list. I don't see that happen. For one thing, they didn't even promote him last year. They jumped the liner to Shields over him from A to AA and left Griffey at high A. Another name on this list, here's one that I think you'll like. How about Dave Martinez, the bench coach of the Tampa Rays?
That's a name that's been bandied about just a little bit. Frankly, if we're going to go into the Tampa Bay dugout, I'll just assume take Joe Maddon if it's all the same to you.
Think they're going to let him get away?
No.
If ifs and buts were candy and nuts, you know, we'd all be happy at Christmas.
Exactly. But if I had my choice, that's a guy I'd take. But, you know, Martinez is a guy that I think you've absolutely – his name's been tossed around, and I presume he's looking to move into a managerial spot somewhere. And I would 100%, without question, I'd give him an interview because the way they do things in that Tampa Bay organization, or the way I'd love to see them doing things in this Reds organization. Now, it's not exactly a perfect apples to apples comparison, but just the things that he's been sitting by Joe Maddon's side and watching him do, and I presume they've talked through all these things. Joe Maddon knows what he's doing, and he manages differently than these typical by-the-book managers, as I call them. And so I don't know enough about Martinez to know whether he'd be a good manager, but I would without question give him an interview.
Another name on this list has a Reds connection, and that's Eduardo Perez.
Yeah, I saw that too. And again, you know, Perez and Ken Griffey and Barry Larkin and – Paul O'Neill. We're talking about guys who now, you know, Griffey does have some managerial experience in the minors, but I think it goes. If you look at these guys in a vacuum, without considering their connection to Reds history and to the great Reds team, we're talking to the 1990 and team and the Big Red Machine.
I'm not talking about Tony. I'm talking about Eduardo.
I know, but his dad. I'm saying there's a, you know, Eduardo stuck around in Cincinnati as a player for too long because of who his dad was, in my opinion. And I think if you look at these guys in a vacuum, you got to ask what are their qualifications outside of the fact that they used to play.
Well, Perez. Now, to be fair, Perez has been was a hitting coach in the big leagues for 2 years and was a bench coach with the Astros this year. So, I mean, he's got some major league experience.
He does, but what's out there? I'm not saying there's not some reason he'd make a good manager. There's not some evidence that he'd make a good manager. I don't know what it is. What's out there, and it might be something you only know if you interview him. But I think it's difficult sometimes for fans, certainly, to evaluate these candidates because, number one, we don't know enough about their managerial philosophy and what they do. And number two, when they're connected to the great Reds teams of the past in some way, there's always going to be fond feelings. And so it's hard to properly evaluate them, I think. I don't know what Eduardo Perez has done or any reason why I should think he'll be a good manager in the big leagues. He might be. I just don't know what the reasons are to believe that.
All the article says is he's young. You know, he's only 44. He's managed in Puerto Rico in the Winter League, and he's highly thought of in baseball circles. The last name on this list is Matt Williams, the third base coach of the Diamondbacks.
Right.
And, you know, he's an interesting guy just for working with Kirk Gibson. And, you know, and I like the way Gibson manages, too. At least the hard-nosed style that he brings to his ball clubs, which I think the Reds could use some of that. But other than that, you know, I don't have anything to say about Matt Williams. Other than the fact that this article brings up the fact that he was mentioned in that Mitchell report with his ties to pay the Peds, and whether that would have an effect or not, I don't know.
I don't care about that from my perspective, but I don't know if the Reds will care or not.
The thing, and you kind of brought this up, the thing that concerns me about Mr. Castellini making this decision is he's made decisions in the past, in my opinion, to please the fans. I think the Phillips contract is a prime example. And he cannot do that with this managerial choice. He has to get the best guy. Even if it's a Sparky Who signing, you know, he can't be afraid to be bold. You know what I mean?
Which, exactly. And that's probably going to mean taking a back seat and letting his baseball people make this decision.
Which you hope is what happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, whether we can trust the baseball people to make this decision,
that's a little different question.
Yeah. Walt Jocketty has done more right than he's done wrong, I'd say. So, and I think everyone is fully aware that this team needs a different type of manager. This is a very important decision for this franchise. So I presume they're going into it with the adequate amount of seriousness. I think in terms of what kind of manager they need, there's been a lot of talk about, for example, with Brian Price, the way he approaches people, the way he holds people accountable.
Yep.
I have a real feeling they're going to go. You mentioned the fiery type of guy, and a guy like Matt Williams or Wally Backman, for example. And I don't know that Brian Price is fiery, but all the reports are that he does. He doesn't let his players get away with a whole lot. He holds them accountable. And I think there's almost no question, in my opinion, that if possible, they're going to get a manager who is not as laid back as our previous skipper, a guy that's not going to manage in September and October like it's a mid-May game, businessman special. So you agree they're probably going to go for some sort of a fiery type manager?
I don't know. I'm like you. I think the biggest thing is that they've got to ratchet up the intensity in the clubhouse. The laissez-faire manner in which this team played, at least the last 2 years, in my opinion, under Dusty Baker. It wasn't just this year. It was last year also, I thought. Especially late in the year when you got to ratchet it up. I mean, they had their last year. They had their foot on the necks of the San Francisco Giants, and they let him off the bat. And he, you know, there's, I hate to go back to using Dusty's thing, but there was no sense of urgency.
None whatsoever. And there never was this season, ever.
No, nope. They always played like there was another game tomorrow. I mean, even the last game of the year. You know,
absolutely.
You bring in Logan Andrusic. Are you kidding me?
Logan Andrusic threw more pitches than anybody in that game other than Johnny Cueto, the starter. That alone still blows my mind in a do-or-die game. Logan Andrusic.
And I'm not saying, you know, there were years that we'd have been thrilled to have Logan Andrusic on this team. And I still think he serves a purpose. But when it's do or die, he's not the guy that we go to, you know. Anyway.
No, I agree. Logan Andrusic and Alfredo Simon got the pitch and Aroldis Chapman. No. So there, you know, in a capsulized form.
So I think
for getting rid of Dusty.
I think we've beaten the managerial position to death here, you know.
Well, do you have any preference for a manager, or do you not know enough? Or
for one thing, I don't know enough. But if it isn't Brian Price, I'm going to be very surprised, because I think that the only way that they're going to hang on to Brian Price is by making him the manager. I don't think you could bring in John McGraw, you know, prop his dead butt up in the dugout and keep Brian Price, because Brian Price is going to go somewhere where he's got an opportunity to manage. And if it's not here, it's going to be somewhere else. And you have to wonder, when he turned down, and by all reports, he turned down the job, I believe, with the Marlins last year.
Yes.
And the belief that he was the heir apparent here, I believe. And if that's the case, you know, it's time to hold to your word. And you know, like I said, I don't know enough about Brian Price. I read the quotes from Bronson Arroyo. Some other things have been said, and he seems like he brings the right combination of things to the table. And if they can hire the right rest of the coaching staff, I think it can be a good fit. But if it's not Brian Price, I'll be very surprised.
I think he's the leader in the clubhouse at this point. And I would actually, like you, I would be a little surprised if it weren't Brian Price. I'm fine with Price, which is surprising to say. Of course, then again, you know, I went my old college, the University of Virginia, they hired a football coach 3 years ago. And at the time I said, boy, I'm really happy with this hire. This is a great hire. And, of course, they're on their way to a 2-win season this year. So there's a lot I don't know about coaching searches. But from everything I've heard about Brian Price, I have no problem with giving him a chance. Now, earlier this week, just to make one final point on the managerial search, I've been sort of following the managerial search of the Mariners, because, you know, Brian Price has spent a lot of years within the Mariners organization, and that's the place I always sort of felt, if the Reds were going to lose him, it's going to be to Seattle, because they're looking for a manager this year as well. And I saw an article earlier this week that they have put on, and the quote was, they put on the full court press to try to talk Sweet Lou Piniella into coming out of retirement to manage them.
See, that's a nostalgia hire to me.
Well, it's 100% for them, because, you know, he's the best manager in their history, clearly.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, Lou's got some a nice line on his resume from Cincinnati as well. And I thought, boy, if Lou Piniella starts entertaining offers to come back to manage, then we're going to start seeing rumors that the Reds are going after him. Now, of course, Piniella's response was, forget about it. I'm retired. I'm doing, you know, 10 or 15 games a year with the Yankees, and I'm very happy doing that. No interest in getting back in the dugout. But talk about a nostalgia hire. Twitter would have gone insane if it turned out that Lou Piniella was a manager.
Yeah, if he was looking for a job again.
Yeah, so. Okay, well, we've discussed what ultimately occurred in the 2013 season in terms of Dusty Baker getting released, and continue to be delirious over that, and I imagine you will be for quite some time until the first time Brian Price orders a sacrifice bunt. But let's take a look back at 2013, if we could. We're a couple weeks out, week and a half since the Reds played, and, well, they sort of played. They barely showed up in that one-game playoff. But since the season ended, And what a crazy, crazy season this year. There are some things that went right this year, though. You know, the Reds did win 90 games. That's not nothing. And there were years when we would have loved 90 games a lot of years. I think about the mid-2000s, and it seemed like a dream to even think about 90 wins. So let's not. I think we shouldn't lose perspective here. The Reds finished terribly, but you know, 90 wins is not bad, is it?
No, it's not. And that's 90 wins without having the Astros in your division.
If the Astros were around,
it could have been around 96, you know, or 97. You know, who the hell knows? But that being said, they won 90 games, but they finished third. And you know what? That's what it's all about. It's where you finish. Think how many games you win.
Well, I thought that was obviously the way the Reds finished up the season contributed to Dusty Baker's demise. But I thought if you look at it in a vacuum, yeah, Dusty won 90 plus games three straight years. But this year he won seven fewer games. The Reds were, you know, fighting last year for the best record in the National League by the end of the season. This year they won seven fewer and finished in third. I think that's a substantial difference just year to year. And when the Reds had decided they were going to go all in this year, when you look up at the end of the year and you see that they finished two spots lower in the division and seven games lighter in the win column, Dusty Baker's case for sticking around seems a little bit less impressive. Anything that pops out at you that sort of went right this year?
I developed a serious man crush on him early, and it held all year. I just think he's a heck of a player. I love watching him play baseball. They talked about his defense in center field, and after the first couple of weeks, maybe the first month, you didn't hear much about it anymore. Was he a Gold Glover out there? No. But he hustled, and he made good decisions for the most part and defensively. And what he did offensively for this team, I don't think you can complain about.
Well, defensively, obviously, he should have been in left field. He was a below-average center fielder. He wasn't brutal in center field, but he was slightly below average, according to the advanced metrics. But
which are kind of a crapshoot, to be honest. I mean,
exactly. That's not the be-all and end-all. And just watching him every day, there were a few times where he thought, boy, you know, Drew Stubbs would have gotten that. But, of course, Drew Stubbs is one of the best defensive center fielders we've had. So I don't have a single problem, not one, with what Shin Soo-Chu brought to the team this year. I didn't mean to start out by insinuating that I did.
And you hear the complaints about him versus left-handed pitching. But I'll tell you what, when you got a leadoff hitter against the left-handers where he struggles, and his on-base percentage is still up around 350. I'll take that.
how many years have we been desperate for a leadoff hitter that is their overall on-base percentage?
Yeah, you know, no kidding.
We would have taken that just about any year.
Yeah.
I don't have the first complaint about Shin Soo-Chu. The Reds are going to make an offer and try to get him to return. And boy, him in left field would be just beautiful. But if this is the only year that we get to see Shin Soo-Chu, I will remember him more fondly than any Red during my lifetime that spent only one year with this club. Yep. Because what a great season, you know. You talk about on-base percentage, and he and Joey Votto were 1-2 in the majors in on-base percentage. But he slugged .462, you know, hit 21 home runs out of the leadoff spot, scored 107 runs.
OPS plus of 143.
143. We've been desperate for a leadoff hitter probably since Barry Larkin. And, you know, to have one that puts up those types of numbers, 143 adjusted OPS plus, that's insane.
And set a team record for getting plunked.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it reminds me of the Bad News Bears when Coach Buttermaker says, lean into one, Stein.
That's a thing on for the team.
Yeah, he didn't mind doing that, crowd the play a little bit, turn his shoulder into one, because you know what? That on-base percentage clicks up, and when you're on base, you can score runs, and that's what the leadoff hitter is supposed to do. So Shin Soo-Chu is going to make an awful lot of money in the offseason, and Shin Soo-Chu deserves to make an awful lot of money. Yep. in the offseason. I don't begrudge him that. I just hope that the Reds are, that Bob Castellini is signing his paychecks, because I doubt there's been a free agent in a long time that I hope the Reds could re-sign more than Chu, because
I agree completely.
What a season.
Let's talk about Jay Bruce for a minute.
Let's do that.
This season this year was, again, pretty comparable to last year and the year before, and even pretty close to the year before that. And this is his 23, 24, and 25 six-year-old seasons. Is Jay Bruce what Jay Bruce is going to always be?
Well, in some ways, and we talked about this before, in some ways his year does look awfully similar to some previous years. But I got to digging a little bit, and I think that Jay Bruce is, if you look at his numbers, you know, batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, in some ways his numbers, as we said, are very similar to all the previous seasons except for 2010, which was his greatest performance, just on the slash and the rate stats. And
even then, it wasn't dramatically different than last year.
No, I agree. But one thing that we, I think, discounted when we previously is the way offense has dropped around the major leagues.
That's a good point.
And so his numbers actually look a little bit better in that context. And a matter of fact, he posted 5.1 wins above replacement, which is more than he's posted in any season of his career. It's 3.5 more than he posted last year. It's more even than he posted in that great 2010 season.
Yes, it is.
That he had. So I think in some ways, Bruce did take a little bit of a step forward, and nobody really noticed it because it didn't show up as much in his statistics. I think part of the reason that his wins above replacement jumped up so much is that his defense went back to being
Jay Bruce-like.
Gold Glove caliber, yeah, Jay Bruce-like defense.
And his counting numbers did go up. Now, he got a lot more plate appearances this year. He got 60 more plate appearances than he got last year. But his doubles increased, his RBIs increased, his home runs went down a little bit. He struck out quite a bit more, but, you know, I don't know if his percentage jumped. I didn't look at that. But if this is the Jay Bruce that we're going to have, I can live with it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's even a chance he may improve a little bit more over this. But if this is what it is, this is an all-star caliber player. You know, 5 wins above replacement is all-star caliber in sort of the rough calculation. And, you know, what more can you ask for? All-star caliber right fielder and gold glove caliber right fielder. Yeah. And, you know, hit 30 home runs, drove in over 100, which should make him really popular in the eyes of
Marty Brown,
one of the talk radio guys. And, exactly. Now, the one thing that concerns me a little bit is he has traded a few more singles for walks, it appears to me, because you're right, he got almost 700 plate appearances this year, and he's never had that close to that many. But he walked 63 times, which is about what he walked last year in 44 fewer plate appearances. Fewer times than he walked back in 2011 when he had 33 fewer plate appearances. You hope, I guess... As they get a little bit older, they're commanding the strike zone. And I guess what my hope had been, and this might have been an unrealistic hope because nobody could beat Joey Votto, but I had influence of Votto on I hope that it would influence Bruce's approach to the strike zone.
Yeah, his strikeout percentage did jump a couple of percent this year. I just looked it up. But, you know, I'll take what we get from Jay, you know, what we're getting from Jay Bruce, and won't complain. I mean, would I like to see him be a little bit better? Sure, I'd like to see everybody be a little bit better. But, you know, you have to be realistic in your expectations, too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, he has improved to where he's, you know, pretty much a, you know, he's an above-average hitter, even against left-handers, actually, nowadays. He's become one of the better. Everyone still gives him flack for not being able to hit left-handed pitching. But, you know, you look at his numbers across the board, they're not bad against left-handers, and he's hit more home runs than anybody against left-handed hitters over the last 2 or 3 years. So, I'm like you. I hope Bruce gets a little bit better, and I think there is room for him to get a little bit better. He just turned 26, after all. It's hard to believe he's been around so long, and he's just 26 years old. But I'm actually happy with the season that Jay Bruce posted this year. No complaints whatsoever. Especially when you consider that he and there's a really good argument to be made that he and Votto and Chu are the only three above average hitters in that entire lineup.
Yep.
I'll take what Bruce has given us.
Yep, I agree.
How about we move on to, since we're talking, let's go ahead and sort of talk through about some of the players. And one idea you had, actually, and I think it's a good idea, was to let's grade some of these players. What grade do you give Chu and Bruce since we've talked about them?
Chu, I think you give an A. I mean, no problem giving him an A. I mean, the guy had a 143 OPS plus. I mean, walked 112 times, hit 21 home runs, stole 20 bases, even though he got thrown out 11 times. The Reds' base stealing is atrocious. That's something else that I think needs to improve. Bruce, I give Jay a B plus. Like you said, he seems to have dropped off a little bit from last year. But like you said, with the offense dropping all over the league, you know, maybe that's not completely fair. But, you know, I give him a high B, maybe a low A. Plus with his defense, you know, a 5.1 WAR. Now, Fangraphs has him at 4.1, but they grade they're a little tougher grader than Baseball Reference is.
Yeah, I'm looking at Baseball Reference, and they do have different formulas. But I give Bruce B+. Chu, I could probably be talked into an A+, given just how much better he was than anything else the Reds had at the leadoff position over the last decade. But certainly A is very fair. What about Joey Votto? That's the other elephant in the room that we've not really discussed much.
And
the discussion this year was about Votto.
Yeah, and there's been some things come out after the season where Joey's talked a little bit, and it sounds like he's basically admitting that the knee bothered him all year. And he's talking about treading water and yada, yada, yada. And you know, and I've had knee surgery, you know, scoped, and, you know, and now I'm not going out there playing first base, you know, 160 games a year. I'm concerned at the loss of power from Joey Votto for the money that they signed him for. And I'm not popping on Joey Votto other than his defense, which was absolutely horrendous this year. I mean, you can't pop on a guy that's got a 926 OPS. But his slugging percentage did drop, and I'm concerned. I guess I'm not concerned. My question is the Joey Votto that we saw this year the Joey Votto that we're going to see next year? Or is he going to regain that power and that ability to drive the ball? I mean, he lost 70% off his, or 70 percentage points off his slugging percentage this year. It's a career low for him. That's concerning to a guy you've got signed to a long-term deal in a power position.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's reason to be concerned in some ways. Now, concern, you know, the guy still put up 6.5 wins above replacement. Still led the league in on-base percentage for the fourth straight year. So, concern, it depends on how you look at that. But on the other hand, even Votto has said, listen, this wasn't my best year. And, you know, he conceded that. And it wasn't this year's. And the question is, he's going to be 30 next year. I think you're right to wonder, is this the Votto we're going to see, especially in light of that dip in power, which is a significant dip. Now, he says, and I don't know if it's, what to say about any of this. I'm just report the facts. You decide. But he says he didn't get a workout, really, all winter long. He didn't get to do what he customarily does in terms of his workouts. And he will. He's looking forward to doing that this winter. And so he was just never right all season long because of that. And that seems like a little bit of an excuse. I just don't know whether we can, until we see him next year, hopefully fully healthy, and see him, whether he returns to the Joey Votto we used to know and love. I don't think it's sort of up in the air. This could be the Votto.
Yeah, is he now a Joey Votto number two hitter, or is he going to return to being Joey Votto the number three hitter? That's the way I see it.
Well, I don't have any answers here. I wish I did. And it's one of the storylines that I'm personally going to be looking forward to the most next year is which Joey Votto are we going to see. You got to expect we're going to still see the guy, as I said, led the league in on-base percentage four straight times. I think only three other guys have ever done that in the history of baseball. And one of those was Ted Williams, Votto's hitting idol.
And he was a pretty good hitter.
He was not bad, you know. He was all right. And it's funny, I've seen quotes where people used to give him flack all the time, Ted Williams, because he wouldn't swing at pitches just off the strike zone. Things, a lot of the things we're hearing about criticism of Votto. So that's good company to be in. But again, you know, he still got on base 435 clip, led the league in walks for the third straight year, 135 walks, by far the most. A lot of the reason for that, obviously, is he's not getting very many pitches to hit. And he's getting fewer solid pitches to hit than almost anyone in the league, according to the PitchFX information. But he's making $17 million now. And, you know, while that's not my money, and I'm glad the Reds are paying it to him, it's going to be a reason he's going to come in under heightened scrutiny amongst the talk radio crowd and the Twitter crowd, and it's going to be in a lot of ways, the number one storyline of this season.
Yep.
And I see no reason why that's not going to continue next year.
But that being said, I still give Joey Votto, I give Joey Votto another one, a high B. For his offense, he's in the A category, but his defense was so bad this year.
And it was bad, wasn't it?
And I've never been I've never understood how he won a Gold Glove. Even the year he won it, he was, to me, he was average. He wasn't Keith Hernandez down at first base, and his throwing is horrendous. And I've said this before on here, he just doesn't field the ball in front of him anymore. You know, he fields everything off to his left and his right, and if he doesn't field it clean, it bounces away. Where if you field it in front of you, it hits you in the chest, and at least you still got a chance to make a play.
That's Little League 101 right there.
It really is, you know, and it's something that I hope, you know, the new manager or whoever the infield coach is going to be is going to, you know, work him out. You know, like I think you said it the last time we talked about this. What was his name on Major League? Corbin Burnson on Major League, you know, and he's falls off, you know. But that being said, I'm not taking anything away from the job Joey Votto did this year offensively, especially if he was doing it on a leg and a half. You know, now why it took him that long to recover from knee surgery, that's a whole, you know, rehab or whatever. And we've talked about the Reds' medical staff in the past, and we don't need to get into that here. Let's move on to Brandon Phillips.
Oh, do we have to?
Well.
Can't we just skip over him?
Okay.
Let's talk about it. He's another one of the elephants in the room with this organization. Brandon's season. Go ahead. You have something to say?
Well, the thing I've raised this issue on the blog more than once in the comment sections on other posts. People have no problem disparaging the offensive year that Todd Frazier had, but take a look at his numbers and Brandon Phillips' numbers.
Yeah, look at them side by side. Yeah. Tell me what you think.
They're pretty damn similar. Frazier strikes out more. He also walks more. You know, he's got a higher on-base percentage, higher slugging percentage. I don't care that
more doubles, more home runs.
Yeah. So we can't talk about Frazier cratering out and then give Phillips a pass. You can't do it. And if you want to bring economics into it, who's making more money? Brandon Phillips plays incredible, incredible defense at second base. I am not a showboat fan, and I think he showboats on plays that he doesn't need to. Now, you know, there are plays that he makes, that play that they show all the time now, where he caught that double play ball on his knees at second base. You know, took a funky high. I've never seen a play like that before. I mean, that was just phenomenal. But he does the behind-the-back flip things at times when he doesn't need to do it, and that kind of stuff just makes me crazy. I readily admit it. The other thing about Brandon is he's a me guy. I think, you know, and I think I may have raised this issue on podcast before, is if you're at the ballpark, you watch and see who's the last Red to take the field every game. It's Brandon Phillips is the last guy out of the dugout every day. Why? I mean, you know, I tried to get over my problem with Brandon Phillips, and I thought he had grown up, And then the thing with C. Trent Rosecrans went off. And I'm done with him. You know, I'm glad, you know, if he can help the ball club, that's great. But I would not be at all unhappy if the Reds moved on from Brandon Phillips.
All right, a couple of things I want to point out about Brandon. First of all, and I believe that if the Reds can find anyone that will take his contract, I believe the Reds will trade him during the offseason.
Yeah, I think they'd have to eat a bunch of it, though.
Probably, and they may not be willing to do that, and I would understand that, too. So this is really a prediction that there's no way of knowing whether I'm going to be right or wrong, but I believe if there is someone will take on that contract, I think they'll move him. Now, with respect to what he actually did on the field last year, you've already said, looking at the numbers, it's slightly worse than Todd Frazier's season. What I see is a guy that's going to be 33 next year, that's making a ton of money, and that is doing what most second basemen do when they hit the early to mid-30s. They start declining. Over the last 3 years, Brandon Phillips' OPS Plus has dropped from 118 to 99 to 92 this year. His OPS, just the raw OPS, 810 to 750 to 706 this year. On-base percentage dropped 353 to 321 to 310 this year. When you look at his wins above replacement numbers, 4.9 to 3.8 last year to 1.6 this year. And 1.6 is really, that's really almost, there are dozens of guys that could provide that at second base. That's bench player story. So what I see is a guy that is in the middle of a steep decline that got his big contract and has sort of quit trying to show everyone that he wants to be the face of the franchise, and has become prickly and has sort of shown his rear end a few times, to put it politely. And I would not be surprised if the Reds are tired of his act and want to move on. Frankly, you said you tried to like Brandon Phillips, and he did. He'd won me over early on. He was a little bit of a hot dog, but then you know he put up great numbers, and the defense was great. And I thought, boy, you know what? And he was, you know, I like the smile all the time. I like a guy that enjoys the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He actually won me over. I was a big time Brandon Phillips fan. You know, and listen, my son plays baseball. He plays second base, wears number 4, loves Brandon Phillips. And I have yet to tell him about some of the things that Brandon's done that are less than flattering, because he likes the guy. But I see a guy that's in steep decline, and if the Reds are unable to move him, I'm afraid that he's about to become a huge albatross around the necks of this team. He's just going to be you know, how many second basemen get better at age 33?
Yeah. I'm concerned about our future. Or even hold that level, you know, even hold their level.
Exactly. And you know, once his defense, and it by some measures, his defense may have slipped a little bit this year. I don't know. It looked awfully good to me. The eye test is not a good way to judge it. But I don't have problems with his defense, I guess. Let's just put it that way. But what happens when his defense starts to slip? You know, he battled some injuries this year. And what happens when he loses some range or loses his arm a little bit and the defense starts to go downhill? He's really not going to be a very valuable player at that point.
Well, the other concern is, to me, you know, you've seen the way he deals with people at times and this kind of thing. Let's assume that the new manager decides that he's not a 2-3-4 hitter anymore, and they're going to hit Brandon Phillips in the 5-6-7 slot. Do you think he's going to react well to that? And how's that going to play in the clubhouse?
No, he's not going to react well to that. I can't see any way, because you mentioned me first, and a lot of what times it seems like he is. That's sort of what went into the whole C. Trent fiasco. How dare somebody question my on-base percentage, you know? He should have been batting 6th or 7th this year. I think he's not going to like it, because he likes now this reputation he's gotten as the RBI guy. And, you know, he got 103 RBIs this year, you know, I could have gotten 75 RBIs batting behind Chu and Votto. But that brings up to me, I don't think he'll respond well, no, to answer your question. But that brings up to me is, I don't know if there's ever been a player that sort of the average fan thinks is fantastic. And even the beat writers think this guy is superb. 100 RBIs versus the actual evidence, which is that he's in a steep decline. But because of those 103 RBIs, so many people think he's a great player. Not just a player, but a great player. When all the evidence suggests he's a below average hitter. Have you ever seen anything like that? Maybe Adam Dunn on the flip side. People thought he was bad, but he was actually putting up good numbers. But have you ever seen anything to match that?
Not that I can remember. Now, you know, it's only been the last few years that I've kind of come over to the dark side, to the sabermetric side, so I can't, you know, look back at my early years being a Reds fan and compare it to that. But I agree with you. The public perception of Brandon Phillips, at least this season, versus what you really got is so different than reality is, and it's something I think the Reds are going to have to battle if they trade this guy or you know try to move him down in the lineup or any of that kind of stuff. I think it's going to be a PR battle.
Yeah, I agree, but I think maybe they could just move him. They could just trade him. It solves a lot of problems.
As always, Bill and I seem to talk too long. So let's just wrap this one up right here, and we'll come back tomorrow with part 2.